been moving all around the Taipei area.
Oh, this always feels good.
It's 5:30 in the afternoon here in Kathmandu, Nepal.
Okay, just a few hundred steps to go, and I'm at the top of the platform here of Swayambhunath, the monkey temple.
I was drinking a mixture of beer, a rice wine, and I am really feeling it now.
I am up at 3:30 in the morning. Go to a tuna auction.
I am here in Mumbai, India.
And I'm here in Tokyo, Japan for Sakura, the cherry blossoms.
It's 7:45 in the morning here in Phnom Penh, and I'm just going to try to cross the street. I'm going to try on a crosswalk.
It's 6:15 in the morning, and I think I'm one of the only people in Ta Prohm. This is the Tomb Raider Temple.
Hi, I'm John Sabo, and this is the Far East Travels Podcast.
Hey there, John Sabo with the Far East Travels Podcast, coming to you from central Vietnam, Nha Trang, where things are starting to get back to normal. I'll have an update for you on what's going on here. And then, of course, we're going to talk about the region and talk about all of the openings and rumblings about when places are going to start reopening again to tourism in this episode. Plus, we'll do a revisit. The last time I was in Malaysia in 2019, which was only months before the first lockdown that happened here, I visited Kuala Lumpur and Penang, so I'm going to take you back there. And we're going to go to the Batu Caves in Selangor, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, as well as walk around Georgetown, Penang in this episode. So, as always, thank you so much for your support. And if you want to stay connected with me, you can do so via the Far East Travels Podcast Facebook page. And now, if you're in the U.S. on mobile, you can listen to the Far East Travels Podcast directly from the Facebook page now, the Far East Travels Podcast Facebook page. That's only for now in the U.S., but I believe Facebook will start rolling out more openings of podcast listening throughout the rest of the world. That is pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about that. So check me out on Facebook, or check the podcast out on Facebook, Instagram, John Sabo's Far East Travels. If you want to support the podcast, there's a couple of links for donations or the Patreon page. And always positive reviews in the iTunes store helps others discover the Far East Travels podcast. So there'll be a link in the podcast notes, in the show notes, and just go to that link. Make sure you're signed into your Apple Podcasts app or account. Rate the podcast out of 5 stars, write a review, and you'll help others discover the Far East Travels podcast. So thanks for those messages. Always appreciate that. Appreciate people that are also in lockdown in various places, going through in some of these countries, the fourth wave here, and getting through it okay. Things have been opening up slowly here where I am in central Vietnam. Here in Nha Trang, or as they say, or some people outside of Vietnam say, Nha Trang, or Da Nang. There's also lots of things going on in these places as the cases have gone down for detection of COVID. And we all, or at least most of us now, are getting on this PC COVID Digital Pass app that we have, and it has all of our information in it. And pretty much to go into any of the supermarkets now, which they're starting to open up again for in-store shopping, or even some of the shopping malls here. There's quite a few shopping malls here, actually, in Nha Trang. I'm really surprised that there are so many in such close proximity of each other. But they are starting to open up, and in order to go inside, you need to scan with this app so that they can, you know, see who's been in there in case there's another outbreak or some detection cases detected while you're in those locations. And it also has information uploaded from the national vaccine platform of your vaccine information, and it'll show not necessarily which vaccine you have, but just shows if you've had the first dose and the second dose. So mine currently is reading that I've been vaccinated with the first dose, which I think in a lot of cases right now, that's the only way you're getting into shopping malls or supermarkets, if you've had one vaccine, or if you have a negative COVID test, I think that you've had done in like the last 48 hours, something like that, will get you inside. There were some people kind of frustrated that the information wasn't getting uploaded onto the app. Most people are saying, you know, take your paperwork with you. I would just scan it and keep it in your phone, your official document that you get. I got a certificate for my first jab. And so they give you these certificates. So it's a good idea just to keep a digital copy of that on you as well to show your proof of vaccination. But it seems like this is how we're going to operate now, at least for at least the next few months or so. As far as transportation goes, they are starting to open up regional flights again by the middle of the month here, middle of October. We'll probably start seeing more regional flights available within Vietnam, and they're going to slowly open up train travel again throughout the country from Ho Chi Minh to Hanoi. So that will start opening again. And again, you will have to have this digital pass or this app uploaded with your information on it if you want to travel. But it seems slowly things are opening up. Ho Chi Minh City has been opening up again as well. And that is currently the situation here as far as the pandemic goes. We can go for walks along the beach, but not right on the beach here in Nha Trang. Da Nang, I believe now they've opened up to the beach to swimmers for a short period of time early in the mornings, I think between 4 and 6:30 a.m., something along those lines. At least that was the first opening that I heard. So Da Nang is starting to open up again. So Central Vietnam seems like it's opening, and Ho Chi Minh City is starting to open up. So slowly we are sort of getting back to what will be a kind of a new normal. The cases have been going down overall in Vietnam. So it appears that the vaccinations have been helping curb the caseload, at least for now. So as I said, domestic flights are going to start again fairly soon in Vietnam. Over to other parts of the region, Bali says they're going to reopen this month to foreigners, according to Indonesian officials. But there's really no plan announced as giving more details than that, at least for now, as far as approved hotels, where the first visitors will be allowed to go, where they can't go. And I'm starting to think they're not really saying tourists. They kind of mention tourists, but they're not mentioning anything about visas. So I'm starting to believe that this opening might just be making it more convenient for some of these people that have specific reasons to be in Indonesia, highly specific circumstances such as investor or business visas. So up until now, if you wanted to go to Indonesia on a business visa, you can get these online, but you had to fly to Jakarta and quarantine in Jakarta for 8 days. Now it seems that you'll be able to fly directly into Denpasar Airport on Bali. And from there, you can go to what will probably be an approved hotel for an 8-day quarantine. So I think they're just making it more convenient for these people that have already been entering Indonesia on investor business visas. It doesn't, they just seem to be a little bit ambiguous about the actual opening of tourism to Bali. But maybe this is the first step before they start considering reopening full on to tourism. But it's been on and off for a few months now. I think Bali is still, or Indonesia is still, kind of waiting to see how other places are opening up and how their openings are going, such as Thailand and perhaps even in Vietnam. So that's the situation for Bali. If you're kind of hunkering or wanting to get back to Bali, it still might be some time before they open it up to tourists. Singapore has had a couple of reciprocal agreements with Germany. So European visitors have been visiting Singapore lately, as well as Brunei on Borneo. They've had an agreement with them as well. So I actually saw a TV show recently where one of the Channel News Asia reporters had gone to Germany and sort of did a little documentary on his visit. It was very interesting. And he was with a guide, and they were traveling around, and the guide was sort of filling him in on where you could go because you had two vaccines, and where you couldn't, you know, where somebody couldn't go if they weren't fully vaccinated, things like that. So that's kind of interesting. And Singapore apparently does have plans to open up to more countries in the coming months. Travelers from Asian countries, regardless of their vaccine status, can travel to Singapore as well, provided they apply for a special travel pass. Now, I don't know if that actually gets you into Singapore proper or if that just allows you to transit. But nevertheless, I think if you're interested in visiting Singapore, you'll want to look up that special travel pass and see what that's all about if you're a resident of Asia. So Thailand still plans to open 7 more provinces beginning November 1st, including Bangkok, Pattaya, Chiang Mai, and Hua Hin. And then December 1st, they're going to open 20 more provinces, including Chiang Rai up there in the north. And then January 1st, 13 more border provinces. So Thailand is opening up. Thailand is under a ton of pressure. Tourism represents 18% of the country's GDP. Thailand lost an estimated $13.54 billion in potential tourism revenue through this pandemic. So there's huge pressure to reopen. That's the situation in Thailand. Now, they're making it easier to visit, but you're still going to need this travel certificate from an embassy or consulate in your country before you're going to be able to travel to anywhere in Thailand, at least for now. So it appears that there really isn't any visa on arrivals yet. But as I said, you can go provided that you have this travel certificate. So you'll have to get that from your local embassy or consulate. And then back to Vietnam. Vietnam still plans to reopen Phu Quoc Island to tourists on special packages, tour packages, starting November 1st. Phu Quoc's kind of an interesting place. I've actually never been there. It is a real tourist destination, but people that I've spoken to, just they love it. It's a paradise, apparently. But, you know, I don't think it's really well known outside of the sort of cult of travelers that just absolutely love Vietnam and Asian travelers overall. So I think it's still a place that you could go and you wouldn't feel it was completely overrun with tourism, but it is very touristy at the same time. So they're planning on opening Phu Quoc, limited amount of people on these special tourist packages. So you're not going to have complete freedom at first. If you're in the first phase of this, you'll probably get to go to your resort and hang out there, which might be really nice. And then visit a few other places that have been approved for tourism visits. There's about 14 four- and five-star hotels that have been approved for this first phase. And that's going to last 3 months. They're only expecting 2,000 to 3,000 arrivals in the first 3 months. And then the second phase will be another 3 months. And again, about 5,000 to 10,000 expected, which looks to me like kind of a test to see how everything sort of goes infrastructure-wise before they start looking at reopening the country wide open. But there's other provinces that are wanting to get openings again as well and have proposals in to the central government. Can Hoa province here wants to reopen. They want to fly travelers directly into Cam Ranh Airport. And then from there, they could be shuttled to these private villas or these villa resorts that they have just absolutely some stunning, incredible villa resorts here in this province. Some are on islands that are only accessible by boat. Villas are like $400 to $500 a night. So there's definitely a market for that in Asia for sure, for people doing, you know, 4 or 5 day packages, perhaps from different countries here. But as far as a wide opening goes, it's still, I think, quite a ways off. But that's for this province. I think they have the same kind of plans for Quang Nam, where Hoi An is. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to open up Hoi An, but they might open up some of those resorts, golf resorts or luxury villa resorts where you could stay and maybe have some limited access to some of the local areas. Shorter stays, I'm sure. But those are the proposals that are in. I've heard of Haiphong being named as well, but I have nothing more on that other than just stories that are told, but nothing concrete. Phu Quoc seems to be the only one that's concrete, that's going to happen, that has been officially approved to go ahead. So this time for November 1st. So that's in a nutshell what's going on in the region here. I just saw in the Phnom Penh Post that Prime Minister Hun Sen of Cambodia has asked for or will plan a reopening of the country in 15 days if there's no new developments in cases over the next 15 days from the 5th or 7th of October. They will start looking at reopening the country in the new norm that it is. So there's places now in Phnom Penh, cafes that you cannot visit inside. You can get takeaway, but you can't go in unless you have, you know, you've been fully vaccinated. So it'll be things like that that will be a part of the new normal in Cambodia. Whether they're going to open it up to outsiders, that's still unknown. The opening could just mean that it'll be a lot easier to travel within the country if you're already there. But whether they're going to open up to international tourists in 15 days, is I don't know. I'd say it's unlikely, but you never know. It could be a possibility. I mean, we're getting closer to November, and I know that they originally, officials in Cambodia, were talking about an opening late in 2021 that could perhaps open up Siem Reap again, at least Siem Reap for now. So that's the situation for Cambodia. So here we are in 2021, October 2021. I'm in Vietnam, and I haven't been outside of the country since February of 2020. So I'm revisiting all of these different places I've been to over the years, at least over the last 5-6 years. And in this little revisit, I'm going to take you to the Batu Caves in Selangor, Malaysia. It's a very nice little place to go. I mean, it's kind of, for me, it's kind of something. I don't feel like I visited Kuala Lumpur until I've taken the 35-minute train out to Selangor and the Batu Caves. It's a classic tourist site for people to visit when they're going to Kuala Lumpur. And a lot of Hindu pilgrims from all over Southeast Asia and South Asia like to go out there to see the shrines and the giant Murugan statue. And it's, you know, it's kind of a cool vibe. It's a cool atmosphere. And it's just a fun, easy little half-day trip or couple-hour trip to do. Go out there and do a walk through the shrines and the caves, and then maybe have some snacks, some Indian snacks or some dinner or something like that. The food's really good out there as well. So this is a little walk I did, just a little short walk I did back in 2019 at the Batu Caves. And then after that, we're going to go and do a walk through Georgetown, Penang.
Hey, replay viewers, welcome to the, sorry about that, welcome to the Batu Caves here in Selangor, Malaysia. About a 40-45 minute train ride outside of Kuala Lumpur. This is kind of new for me. I haven't actually been out here in about, I guess, 4 years, almost 4 years now since I've been out to the Batu Caves. And last year they painted the stairs here. This is really cool. I really love this. Apparently they did it without any approval or anything. So, and it's, of course, a tradition for me to come out here and to rain. It's starting to rain a little bit now, I think. So this might not be a really long broadcast, but we'll go see the wild monkeys. We'll go see the monkeys. There's the Murugan, the big Hindu deity statue. They have a big festival here late January, February every year called Tapasam, where people carry up large containers of milk as a sign of devotion and offering to Murugan. And some of them will carry them on their back with piercings in their back as well, which apparently doesn't draw blood, but it's just a way to show their devotion. This is a god. This is the largest Murugan statue in the world, right here in Selangor. The Batu Caves are right up there, and the 272 stairs to get to the top. But I'm not going to walk them in this broadcast. I'm just going to show you a quick little run through around here, and then I'm going to go up into the caves. It is a dude. It's a guy. It's definitely a dude. There's just tons of monkeys around here earlier, and they're really, they can be really notorious. They really can be kind of nasty sometimes. I've seen them steal stuff right out of people's packs. There was tons of them around here earlier. It's about 6:05 here. Stairs are cool. I love the stairs. I think they're really cool. Take a little walk up here. There was just a whole bunch of monkeys here earlier. They're gone now. I guess they've gone because the food's gone. The food source is gone.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a workout here. It's just the rain that always kind of damps it a little bit for me, but that's okay. You will like it at the time. I've been here several times. I've already been here a few times, actually. This will be maybe my fourth or fifth time out here. But it's been about four years. It's like a puja going on right now. They have like different times of the year. There's big events out here. Of course, for all the main Hindu festivals. And then that special one I was telling you about. Yeah, this is very southern Indian style. Like I say, Tamil is like South India. Thanks. I'm going up to Penang. I think Monday I'll be heading up to Penang. Looking forward to that'll be my first visit to Penang. So I'm in KL for another couple days. It's easy to get out here. Just hop on the train at KL Central. It's about a 40-minute ride out here. So actually, I think this is the busiest it's ever been since I've been coming here. I don't know offhand. I guess about the low 30s, I guess, right now. There was some rain earlier, so that tends to cool it down a little bit. That's very cool. I just wanted to bring you a quick little video from here, and I'm going to sign off, and I'll have some more stuff for you, longer form video from Malaysia real soon, maybe even tonight, who knows. Hey.
I remember this trip was, you know, to Kuala Lumpur, it was so rainy. I mean, I was in the rainy season. We just had torrential downpours at times, but, you know, it's always short. So, you know, even if you come during the rainy season to Southeast Asia, you know, you're going to have times, obviously, where you're going to need to be under, you know, the roof of something or a shelter or something like that just to wait out the rains. But the rains usually don't last more than a couple of hours. It just depends if there's a tropical storm or a typhoon moving through the region. Other than that, it's usually 1 to 2 hours of rain. So amazing that especially Western visitors or travelers are so fascinated by these monkeys that visit all of these different places. I think if you have lived in Asia a long time, you're a resident or you're a citizen of one of the countries here in East or Southeast Asia or South Asia, monkeys are just kind of the norm. But even for locals or people within the region, they're always fascinated by these monkeys, and they're just everywhere at the Batu Caves. So that's a great place to visit if you've never been to Kuala Lumpur. And certainly if you can time it with one of their festivals, it could be even more exhilarating or exciting. So then on this trip, I visited Penang for the first time. Penang, of course, is an island of Malaysia. It was a center for trade during the British colonial era. And interesting enough, the locals actually had a lot of say, obviously, in keeping some of these colonial names, like Georgetown, the name of the largest city or the main city or the old city of Penang and Butterworth and these other places. Is quite often you'll visit places in Southeast Asia, and rightly so, they change the names from colonial to reflect more of the local culture. But the locals really wanted to keep that colonial heritage. So the street names are pretty much, I think, mostly left to what they were. Maybe not all of them, but some of them at least are, maybe more than some. And then the actual towns themselves, the names have not changed. And there's just some very beautiful architecture to take in. And of course, it's always, for me, it's that mix of colonial architecture and local culture and the temples that make it such a fascinating place to visit, a place that I think it's not the same as it used to be for me, having lived here for 8 years, but it still does invoke that charm that I think will never go away from my feelings for East Asia and Southeast Asia and South Asia. So here's a little walk around Georgetown in Penang, Malaysia.
Must be getting a bad signal around this area. Look at all these old... Then this is really the colonial part. the British colonial part here, where we just came out of, where the old local neighborhoods, and these would have been where all the government buildings are, big business buildings. And this was a trading center of East India British company. So a lot of trade would have come in and out of here. Oh, let's go down to the water. There's a cruise ship right there. I am doing a lot of walking around here, and I use the share bike program that they have as well, which helps get around. This is Malaysia. Yeah, this is Georgetown. This is on Penang Island. And it's a huge destination for Asians. I'm not so sure how many Westerners make it up to this part of Malaysia. There's actually quite a settlement of Westerners here over the years. I don't know how many there are now, but it was quite a popular place for expats from the West to come and live. Somebody else was scoping or broadcasting from Malaysia, and it was raining. Well, it's a rainy season. So we had rain almost every day when I was in Kuala Lumpur. So in Southeast Asia, it's going to rain almost every day from now until November. Now look at this old building that is now the Bank of China. Here's the Tourism Malaysia building. This looks old. I'm not sure if it actually is old. This one looks authentically old. Yeah, well, the rain helps cool things down for sure. I think it might have rained a little bit here, maybe last night, I'm not so sure. Yeah, this is, hello, welcome. This is Georgetown, Malaysia. This is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it has been since 2008. Look at this beauty here. This is a wonderful walking city. And as I was saying before, it's fairly civil here. The people are very courteous traffic-wise. They do wait for pedestrians. They do yield to pedestrians here, unlike some places in Southeast Asia. So I think you'd feel, no matter where you come from in the world, I think you'd feel quite comfortable walking around Georgetown, Malaysia. Well, these are old British colonial buildings, but sometimes they... you know, when they designed them, they also introduced Asian components of design as well when they designed some of these buildings. They did that in India as well. The British did that. They would take some classic designs and then incorporate some Asian or in that instance, Indian designs. And then we're coming up to this memorial clock for Queen Victoria over here. For her jubilee anniversary, they built this. And then beyond that is the port, and there's a large cruise ship in port right now. And this would be facing towards mainland Malaysia. So across the little strait there would be Butterworth. And that's the train station where you pick up the train to go back to KL or go further on. And that's a lot, very popular. I tried to actually get a train ticket booked from KL to Butterworth to Penang here, but I was out of luck. They were all sold out. It's a very popular ride. A lot of people prefer to take the train. It's more picturesque. It takes a little bit longer than the bus, and then you'll have to depart at Butterworth, and then you can take the ferry over. Somebody's asking about, have I seen any classic Minis here? No, I haven't. I don't know. Were they big here at one time? Was there a lot of Mini Coopers in Malaysia at one time? I don't see too many vintage cars here, actually. Well, you would assume that, sure, because of the British rule up until 1957. That was when Malaysia or... Malay became independent from Britain. They're very popular in KL. I don't recall ever seeing any like old vintage ones. I'm sure they're around though. So I'm just below this memorial clock tower to Queen Victoria. Well, I guess it's like anything anywhere. It's a status symbol if it comes from somewhere else, right? So this is definitely one of the iconic landmarks of Georgetown. So this is 60 feet high, and it signifies 1 year each of the Queen's reign up until 1897. It cost $35,000 back then to build, 1897. Diamond Jubilee. Her Majesty Queen Victoria. So my first impressions of Georgetown are very beautiful streets, feel safe, definitely on the tourist side, but anything that's nice is going to be touristy. That's why it's touristy, because it's really nice. So a lot of people a lot of people that travel a lot kind of turn their noses up at places like that because they think it's a tourist site. But it's a tourist site because it's a very cool place. So again, some more work, some more renovation done here. I am not sure how old that building is as I'm walking towards the water here. So he's asking me have I tasted the Penang Assam Laksa. Yes, I had some for lunch today. I was just saying that earlier. And it was absolutely wonderful. I bought it from there's a food street here where I think they kind of specialize in laksa. And I went down there and I bought it from a famous cafe. I think they've been around since 1970. And they're quite well known for their laksa. They'd run out of fish balls. Sometimes you can order fish balls to go in it, but they had no more fish balls left, so I just had the broth, a little bit of the onion and different things, and that nice Assam Laksa tang from the tamarind. Wonderful. So I would easily have that for breakfast. And as many Malaysians do, have laksa for breakfast. Gurney Drive, I'm not 100% certain. It could have been. Could have been. I'm just getting familiar. It's always a blank slate for me when I first get to a place that I've never visited before. So, but how I get to know a place is really I walk it. I just keep walking and walking and walking. And this time I'm using a bicycle as well, just to speed up the process a little bit. But I just keep doing that until I know it inside out. This is the Link Bike program. I think I'm going to do a YouTube video on this because there's a couple of things I want to warn people about because there's something a little bit kind of wonky about this, a little misleading. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. But this is just a fabulous way to get around Penang. Now, you can use Grab, but sometimes you don't need to. It's just such a short distance, or they won't pick you up if it's only a kilometer long. But getting on a bike can save you some time. Even in the tropics, like it gets a little hot here, it might get a little sweaty. You might want to ride a bike around at 12, but it certainly helps you get in and around some of the different places from Little India to Chinatown and maybe to where your hotel is. And they have enough of these stations that it's fairly convenient. But there is something I want to warn you about if you want to use one of those when you come here. And I'm going to make a YouTube video about it. But overall, I think it's a good program.
Thanks so much for listening to the Far East Travels podcast. You know, when I listen to those segments, I kind of feel like I've really, disconnected with the way my life was because I was so much on the go before the pandemic. I mean, almost traveling every 3 or so months to different places and being in one place. Although I have traveled a little bit around Vietnam during this pandemic time, it doesn't feel like it's the same as my life before this. But it may be like this for a while, so I still might be, although I'll be sharing with you some interesting things from Vietnam, I still might be sharing some of these past trips at least for a little while longer until things open up here. So thank you so much. I really appreciate your support. As always, you can stay connected with me on Twitter, FarEast_travels on Twitter, Instagram, John Sabo's Far East Travels on Instagram, the Facebook page. The one for sure to connect with, especially if you're in the U.S., is the Far East Travels podcast page, as well as the Far East Travels page and the John Sabo official page and my YouTube channel. I should have a new video uploaded in the next few days or so, another on the opening up of Central Vietnam and sort of life getting back to the new normal, or normal as we know it now, in the next few days for my YouTube channel, John Sabo on YouTube. So thanks so much, and I wish you always safe travels, namaste, tashi delay, and peace from Vietnam.